one more time. We Talk Comics is back, and this is probably going to be the most awkward opening to We Talk Comics in history, which is saying something, but I'm joined here today by, what I'm saying is, if We Talk Comics, if it was like a D&D game, this following host would be the nerd. Brett, how are you doing? What have you been watching, reading, or doing last little while?
Haven't been reading anything. Haven't been watching much of anything. Been working. I do a lot of working.
Well, thanks for lightening up the mood, Brett. This next gentleman, if he was his archetype, would
talking be... Talking to you feels like work, though.
Well, it is work. But I'm adorable. This next gentleman, he would be the geek archetype. What have you been doing, reading, or watching there, Keith?
I am reading Walking Dead. I just started Volume 4. I'm also reading Gotham Central, Rooka and Brubaker. And right now, I just finished watching the complete run of Third Rock from the Sun, and I'm starting back into Jericho because the Season 3 graphic novel is sitting on my shelf waiting for me to rewatch the whole series before I read it.
Nice, nice. All right, the next fella here that's joining us, our next co-host, is archetype, if he was Dungeons & Dragons, would be the sloppy bitch. Chris, what have you been watching, reading, or doing?
Well, I don't work while I do, but I read a lot of comic books. I read the entire 84-issue run of Incredible. And last night, I watched the
Invincible?
DC animated movie of The Dark Knight. Oh, sorry, Year One.
Year One.
Batman Year One.
And was the comic book Invincible?
Oh, yeah, 84-issue run of Invincible. Thank you.
I love when Brett knows what you're reading better than you do.
He read it, but he didn't look at the covers.
Yes.
And that Invincible was incredible.
awkward. All right, and I am I'm Mo. I don't have an archetype. I'm the Dungeon Master, and you're all in my game. So we're going to start off. This show is We Talk Comics issue, or show 13. Let's just call it issue, because we're a comic book show. Issue 13, Independence Day. Of course, we're joining a small press month, and we're going to be highlighting small presses all through our November shows here. And we're going to start off with the topic of small press versus indie books, and kind of trying to define what the difference is or isn't. And so I'm going to throw off to Keith first for opening thoughts.
Well, it's a hard discussion. Mo, you've said before, these days, if you're a company besides Marvel and DC, you're probably an independent, by some definition of the word. The new numbers show that Marvel and DC are splitting up about 80% of the dollars in the market right now. The top five companies, I should say 79%, and then we're about 85% if you include the top five companies. So there's not a whole lot of dollars going to anyone besides the top five or six companies. But this discussion has been had in film for quite a long time, and in film terms, there's a lot of discussion about an independent film versus a low-budget film. Is it the question of control? Is it a question of budget? Is it a question of who starts the money and who has the distribution? In comic terms, independent can also mean creator-owned. But you have DC Comics has a creator-owned line, Vertigo. There is small press for sure. How small do you have to be called small press? Boom has 1% of the market, but very few people would refer to them as a small press title, small press publisher. So it is a bit of a mishmash how you actually decide what is an independent, what is a small press book these days, other than it's not going to be Marvel, DC, Image, Dark Horse, or in this case IDW, which is just about the same percentage of the market as Image and Dark Horse these days.
All right, Brett, your thoughts on how would you define independent small press books?
Well, I think it's interesting because I remember back in the days when we had our store, and there was that time because Image was so booming and enormous at that point that it was definitely not small press. It was definitely not independent in any way. It was like, despite the fact that it had like elements of independent titles, it just wasn't, because it was so big. And nowadays, you know, when I'm reading something, I barely even see the I logo on any comic book, so I almost feel like it's really taken that plunge down into independent books, despite the fact that it has a name that would still support, you know, not independent comics.
Did you say that you thought Image was, what was it you said, booming and exploding, something like that? Before?
Back when we had our story.
So large, booming, and exploding. Kind of like me when I see Keith's mom. See what I did there? See that? See that?
Really? What a long distance to get there.
I stopped what Brett said about two words in as soon as he said that and went, I can't wait to use this one. It's going to be a lot of mom jokes on this podcast, folks.
I said Boom Studios a while ago. You could have jumped in then.
Yeah, that would have made a lot more sense.
Yep, I got to write Boom jokes for
that. Boom Studios is a great name for a porn film company, almost as good as No Pants Productions. But anyways, let's throw over to Chris then for his opinion on small press and how he would define small press and independent books.
Well, when we announced that we were going to do Small Press Month, I actually always considered anything that wasn't the big five, if you look back a couple years ago, as an independent. But I think that definition needs to be changed. Looking at what Image is publishing now, it has the spirit of independence. I don't particularly consider what Icon at Marvel as independent, or what DC is doing with Vertigo now. It doesn't have that independent feel. That said, I have a hard time considering anything with a Spawn title as independent. I think it's a very complicated question. I think maybe we have to redefine the terms in comic books. For years, the term independent worked. I don't think it does anymore.
Okay, well, that sucks, because this show is called Independence Day. But that's okay.
Yeah, sorry, I did it just to screw you, man.
Yeah, that's all right. You know what? I said this to Keith, and I think I've said this to Brett earlier. I mean, I would argue that anything that isn't DC or Marvel mainstream superhero could be considered small press. I would consider Vertigo small press, for instance. I would consider Dark Horse small press. But I wouldn't consider small press necessarily the same thing as Image, or sorry, as indie. An indie book and a small press book to me is not necessarily the same thing. Small press still may have some ability to market their book and some name recognition behind it. Walking Dead to me is a small press book, but it's extremely popular. Where some of these books we'll get to later, or books within slave labor that we talked about last week, Runners or Die, Byron, Die, these are indie books to me. And indie and small press doesn't necessarily have to mean the same thing. So Vertigo to me, small press. Dark Horse to me, Boom Studios, Oni Press, IDW, Image, all of that, in my mind, I see as a small press book. Keith, any thoughts on that?
I'm still not really clear on how you're splitting it up.
You're not?
Well, I mean, Vertigo's cutoff for their print runs is so much larger than... obviously, Slave Labor doesn't even do print right now on most books. But for, you know, someone like Abstract, Rachel Rising prints about 3,000 copies. That's small press. But I would also call that very independent. So, yeah, I don't know where you make the line. And I don't – maybe they can be both. Maybe there isn't a line.
Well, okay, we're talking about DC and Marvel have 79% of the market share, you said. How much of that is –
to correct that, 71%.
71%, okay. How much of that is DC?
Well, I'm jumping ahead to some October sales numbers, but
okay.
October numbers – 42.5% DC, 29% Marvel.
So of that 42.5%, how much do you consider Vertigo to be?
If you were to guess. I have no breakdown on that.
You have no breakdown. I'm just asking for an educated guess.
I don't think the highest Vertigo title sells what the lowest New 52 title sells.
Maybe 1.5%, 2%, equivalent to what an Image is doing, an IDW is doing.
It'd probably be equivalent to Image or IDW. I'd probably put it there.
Well, that's how I'm defining it. I'm defining it by small press means that it has some sense of a creator-owned ability to control the product, and as well as their market share combined. These are ways that I view small press. And like I say, indie book to me means you're really independent. To me, that means you're really out there all by yourself with nobody helping you, trying to get your product off the ground. Chris, what do you think on that?
Well, I think it's too early to judge anything that Vertigo is doing. We don't really know 100% what DC is doing with the Vertigo line. They've said it's going to be all creator-owned, but they really haven't done anything but cancel a whole bunch of series and say they're going to keep publishing Sweet Tooth. But that's about it. I'm looking forward to seeing what they introduce in the next year. But it could be a Paradox Press situation where they're just sort of going to run this thing out and not add anything. So even looking at Vertigo as a legitimate publisher, whether it's indie or not, I think the question is kind of moot.
Okay. Brett, any last thoughts on this particular subject?
I think, again, Image is an interesting case because of the fact that they already are split down into so many companies within Image of the people that publish the books, that I think that when everything combines to form Image, it becomes a much greater whole, whereas each of the separate companies would only have, again, a fraction of whatever Image has. So I think it would be quite a bit smaller.
Okay. Image at one point was the number two company. Image at one point was ahead of DC in the market share. They never were able to overtake Marvel, but I think it was when Valentino and Larry, I think it was Larry Mazar, is that the name of the gentleman, were like the publisher and editor-in-chief and president of the company. They started to introduce a lot of definitely independent books with the idea of putting them small press and independent books with the idea of giving them their marketing power. And that was in the probably late 90s, around 1998 or something like that. So I think it's been a long time since Image has already made a paradigm shift in how they view themselves.
Just a quick note, I'm looking at the sales results of October. The first Vertigo I see is Spaceman number one at number 110 on the chart. It's the first of a miniseries, and it was a $1 comic. The next one on the list is Fables at 131. So easily all of the New 52, including reprints of number ones of a New 52, are far, far ahead of that.
Okay. Chris, last thoughts?
Nothing. I'm actually relieved to see. I was unaware that Vertigo actually was publishing a new book, but I have to look into this Spaceman because I am a fan of Vertigo.
Yeah, I think we all have appreciated that Vertigo was able to, through the DC imprint over the years, put a more mature, probably lyrical viewpoint. I don't know if that's making any sense out there, though, through a major publisher. Does that make any sense to you guys?
Since when have you worried about making sense?
Yeah, good point. Screw it. Let's move on to our next subject. Who wants to start four for a dollar? In fact, what order should we do this in?
I'll start.
Keith is going to start everything. It's going to go Keith, Brett, Chris, Mo on everything. Keith, four for a dollar, please. Tell everyone what this new semi-regular feature of ours is.
Four for a dollar is us talking about books that we love, storylines, series that didn't last, and the title has a couple of levels. There are four of us, but also these are books that you can generally find very cheap, including the cheapo bins at your comic shows. And
there are four of us, and you can have sex with any of the four of us for a dollar.
That's right. 35 cents.
Not a dollar. Of course, if you have a dollar, you'll have change. Go get yourself a coffee.
Now, I had a different title put aside for my $4 pick this week, but talking to my friend Matt on Twitter today, he's on Twitter as Photo Club with an F, and we started talking about the Legion of Superheroes 5 years later, which started in the late 80s, ran through until Zero Hour. I just reread these over the summer. They've never been collected. It was Keith Giffen and the Beer Bombs working, and they took over Legion, and they jumped it 5 years gap between the end of one series and the beginning of Giffen drawing and cope and plotting, and then the Beer Bombs writing. So the Legion 5 years later arc was, they jumped 5 years later, there had been a war, Shrinking Violet's planet and Cosmic Boy's planet had been to war. The a couple of the other races have moved in on Earth-controlled space. The United Planets is in tatters. And the Legion's been disbanded. They had slowly lost members over the years. And then I think it was Polar Boy was the last leader before they just disbanded the team entirely. And then at the beginning of the series, Cosmic Boy and Chameleon Boy, and they all go by their real names in this series, start putting the team back together. And it's very dark. It's very late 80s, early 90s comics. Most of them drawn by Keith Giffen. They introduced some new characters that have never appeared since or haven't been used as much. Laurel Gand, Kent Shakespeare, who's really never been used again. They put him in the Academy or something a couple of reboots later. But now it's kind of looked on as one of the least favored runs of Legion, and which is really too bad. I'd love to see it collected. It was beautiful art. Just such a great run. But very cheap to pick up in your bins.
You can probably get four for a dollar.
Mm-hmm. Keith, what issues were those?
It was. It started at number one in 1989. So whichever volume that is. They did cancel the book and restart at number one. It ran for a couple of years, and then they split it off into two books, Legion of Superheroes and then Legionnaires. That arc and the original, because it was a carry-through of the Silver Age Legion, it ended with Zero Hour, and they rebooted it completely after Zero Hour, and it's been rebooted since then twice.
It become like Legion Lost, or what was it, Rebel 95, or one of these things, or I don't know. There was a lot of stuff coming out about Zero Hour there related to that. You know what? It's just something that I feel like I should have read, and yet it's not even really sticking with me at all. It sounds like good stuff. Brett, what do you think?
Well, I've read all the vast majority of those issues. I don't actually remember that many of them because it's been so damn long since I've read them. But, basically it's, it's one of those cases where, because I am such a big fan of Keith Giffen and a lot of his plotting, especially on those Legion issues, it is one of those runs that I would really like to go back on, and so thanks, Keith, for reminding me of that.
Hey, that's what this segment's all about. Brett, how about your $4 pick?
Well, I was going back and forth on this, but my $4 pick is going to have to be from one of my absolute favorite comic book writers, one of the world's greatest hacks, Max Allen Collins. I'm going to go with Wild Dog.
Nice. Love it.
I love the character so much. He had his opening miniseries. He had the nice sizable run through Action Comics Weekly. He had his one shot afterwards, and I understand that he also appeared in the whole Final Crisis business. But I didn't read any of that, so.
Yeah, you wouldn't have liked it. He was barely there. He's like in the background of a panel. He's like, you remember how in Justice League all the time? When you'd be watching that series on the screen and they'd be up there in the satellite and some character would walk by in the background and you'd be going, it'd be like their shadow and you'd be going, is that Blue Devil? Is that? No, it's not. It's kind of like that, one of those things. That's cool, though. I love Wild Dog. I remember when you gave me that, I was at first I was shocked by the violence of it because it was a violent book for a time and even in Action Comics, but not shockingly violent, just more than I was used to seeing. Just basically a lot of red, but not graphic, just a lot of red, red in there. But really good characterization, a good mystery on who was Wild Dog for some time, too. And they open it up with that in the opening miniseries. And just great characterization. Just that was a vigilante I could really get behind. Thoughts on Wild Dog? Chris?
Loved it. Nothing more to say. Max Allen Collins has never let me down.
Yeah, Max Allen Collins is one of the best.
Collins.
Especially his adaptation of Waterworld, the novel. Ooh.
Okay, he's a hack, but he does good work in between. And Keith, Wild Dog?
That was one of my little brother's favorite comics. He never got into comics the way my older brother and I did. And his favorite books were Wild Dog and Animal Man. Grant Morrison's Animal Man.
Nice.
So, yeah, I love that book. And there was an Action Comics Weekly run of that character, too, wasn't there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then a special. Yeah, and it was just the original arc that was set up as the mystery.
I can't recall. Before she was, yeah. Who was the artist on that again? He worked one art
screen. Terry Beattie.
There you go. Okay, beautiful.
Actually, one of the things that I think it's that it was really easy to – it would have been really easy to write it off as DC's Punisher ripoff. But I think that Max Allen Collins really brought more to the character, and I think he was kind of allowed to do what he wanted with it, which I think made it a much better, deeper book.
I'd agree with that. Chris, what's your four for a dollar?
Okay, I picked the book that if you don't have time, don't pick it up, because it is a commitment. It will really screw up your head. I've picked Larry Mulder's Bean World. I'm using your pronunciation on that. It is a book that really defies description in any way. It has its own Bean World logic. You really have to just sort of study it and learn the world that the main characters live in. I mean, everything is in question. Whether or not gravity exists is a question that took me probably the first trade paperback to figure out. Really highbrow stuff, yet the art style is rudimentary at best. They're basically stick figures, but it is one of the most mind-warping comics I have ever read.
All right, I read that when it was originally published. Gave it about 6 issues. I didn't really enjoy it. I kept on trying to because everybody talked about Larry Mulder and how much they liked him. And I believe at the time, I think it wasn't published through Image, I don't believe. Was it, Chris?
It was first published by Ellipse. And then I believe it went to Image for a couple of issues. It then went to Rob Liefeld's company where it was printed as a backup feature in a comic called Asylum, and then it finished up last year over at Dark Horse in a big collector's volume.
Well, Larry Mulder at the time was the president of Image, which is why I was not sure.
Yeah.
There
was some controversy when he went over and still did the book with Asylum, but he was still working there when that happened.
No, I mean, like I said, I tried it. I tried about 6 issues. I'm not a coffee drinker, so I guess I didn't really get into Bean World, but what the hell?
Nothing to do with God.
No, I know. There was a different character that did that, though. He drank a lot of coffee, and I think his name was...
Too Much Coffee Man. Too Much
Coffee Man.
Could be. But, Bean World, yeah, I mean, I tried it. It didn't work for me, but that's what's cool about 4 for a dollar. People can go in, try something, and it's cheap, and who knows, maybe it'll really work for them. Brett, did you or Keith, either one of you read that one?
Well, can I actually just, I just want to throw something out. I'd like to correct you on, it's Larry Mulder.
Mulder, there you go, excellent.
And Asylum actually was, it wasn't a backup story in Asylum. Asylum was all just short tales. It was more of an anthology series, yeah. Anyways, I mean, there was no packets, but anyways, you know, I've always been a fan of the look and the concept, but again, like you say, it is a real investment in time to have to get into. So, I think that's why I tended to pass it over, and also the fact that until they've really brought it all together. It's been really hard to compile everything.
Yeah. And you're stupid.
Oh, yeah. We're talking four different publishers with, like, two issues a run.
Keith, did you read it?
No.
Well, go ahead. You can get four for a buck. All right. Let's. I guess it's me. My pick, Malibu Comics, Firearm. James Robinson. I'm sure you can pick this up. There was enough of a print run that it's out there and it's available, whereas Bean World, you'll have a little bit of difficulty actually finding. But you'll find some Firearm out there. And it was popular enough. Never a big seller, but had a cult following. Created by James Robinson, of course. Many people know him for his work. He's worked with, of course, a lot of DC books. He's doing the upcoming, isn't it, Justice Society, I believe? Is that correct,
correct.
Keith? Yeah.
Correct, yeah.
Yeah, and...
And I think another run of Starman?
Perhaps, yeah. Perhaps.
Shade has just started.
Shade.
And Starman probably is maybe his most well-known work. But this was just predated Starman by a little bit. Character was created by him and Howard Chaykin and Cully Hamner. Hamner. And it was really, really interesting. It launched with a zero issue. And this zero issue was a real collector's item because it came with a movie, a 35-minute movie, VHS copy. I don't know if anybody else has ever done something like that. That was the first part, and then the comic book was part two of that storyline. And the movie, despite the minimal budget, was just really cool because it had that same cool kind of noir, hard-edged feel that the comic book had. Because here was a character in this comic book world that did have superpowers but never used them. That wasn't what it was about. It was a great series, great art, great, just really, really a nice, a vicious streak without being off-putting and just, you know, again, not like Wild Dog, though there's some similarities, not like their version, not Malibu's version of the Punisher, their own character, and I love this series. I loved the villains. I loved the characterization, the dialogue. I thought it was awesome stuff. Brett, what did you think of Firearm?
Well, I may be possibly the only person in existence to still own the original VHS copy.
Dude, you gotta make
that,
me a copy.
Zero issue.
That was so hard to find.
No, but I did it. I love the book. I enjoy the Rafferty villain. You know, it was definitely one of those scenarios where James Robinson was really at the height of his writing ability at that point, and he was pounding a lot of stuff out, but he still maintained really good quality on that book. So I definitely enjoyed that one.
Keith, you read it?
I read it a long time ago. I only have a kind of vague memory, but I know I've watched the video. I know that I think I watched the video.
Because I think Brett lived with you. You were two were roommates when Brett got that, I think. It's possible.
We would have been roommates long after it came out. But, yeah, I was probably going through the shelves and like, hey, what's this weird 35-minute movie with no case? And
don't know. It actually has a case.
Does it have a case?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Yeah. Well, then it was he must have just recently rewatched it, which is probably every couple of months, and still owns a VCR for that. I remember the Chaykin covers more than anything else, and it's funny, when you mentioned it, I kept thinking it was Chaykin, and I guess it was just the covers were so striking. Chaykin has really great covers, and that's what I remember of the book, not actually the content. So adding this to my bin diving list for the weekend.
Cool. Yeah, Cully Hamner does have a similar style, a little bit more angular than Chaykin, but I think there is definitely some similarity there.
Yeah, and I just read his Red just yesterday, actually. So now I'm in the zone. I'm in the right space for it.
Did you read it at all, Chris?
Yeah, I did. I can't say it really stands out in my memory, but I do remember the Ultraverse line from Malibu, and I miss it.
Absolutely.
I don't really. I'm sure it was excellent because James Robinson. He's another guy that just delivers. But, yeah, no, I remember having a good time with all those books back then.
I think he is an easy character to forget about because of his Ultraverse tie-ins, and I think that that he actually didn't really fit in the Ultraverse, and that may have been the only issue with the book, is when they did try to shoehorn him in to the actual storylines that were going on in the Ultraverse, whereas he fit better on his own.
Yeah, that's true. There was, what was it, they had their big crossover, Black September, and I think he was a part of, they put him for a little while on some team book as well. And unfortunately, when the series was not selling that well, they tried to do another series called...
Was that Codename Firearm?
Codename Firearm, yeah. And he was like a 6-issue, then he would be like the backup story, like a 6 or 8-page backup story, and of course, way better. That didn't take off either. It was,
I thought Codename Firearm was an attempt to reboot the
No, he still had a backup series. I remember that. He definitely was backing it up in some way, but, yeah, no, it was cool. It was cool stuff. Like I say, just, if you read it or watch any of those books, any of that, you know, was it Harry Brown or any of that, you know, those kind of British gangster movies and that type of thing, and you enjoy those, you probably enjoy this. I think there's a certain similarity in this book and its style of presentation to that. Of course, Robinson, of course, another British writer, and that would be why. So, but yeah, absolutely enjoy it.
I'll say check our blog. My first blog post is a $4 entry on the Trial of the Flash.
Beautiful, beautiful.
So October sales numbers have come out. I was visiting our pals at Comics Chronology that they do up analysis, really great analysis of comic sales trends and estimates on print runs, total volumes. October sales for DC are unbelievable. Any thought that it was going to drop off immediately is long gone. With the having reprinted a second print of every New 52 and many third prints, including Animal Man, which deserved as many prints as it could get, DC just owned October in a way that I don't think Marvel was prepared for. Marvel threw so much at September to offset, and DC had just kind of barely snuck by. This was not a sneaking by. Unit sales, 50% of all comics shipped by Diamond in October were a DC book. In dollars, that's 42.5% of the money. Marvel has 29, Image 4.5, Dark Horse 4.5, and IDW 4. It is an unbelievable domination of the market for October for DC. And, Mo, you'll be happy to know these numbers, because this, I know, is the thing that you were most concerned about. October sales are 24% up over the previous October. And overall, October was a $40 million month for Diamond. 11% over last year, 33% up over 5 years ago. It is actually the highest dollar month in the history of Diamond Exclusive. And this is not just DC, this is everyone's numbers went up this month.
That's, you know what, that's good. That's good. Industry we love, and obviously we want to see it strive, and you know, that's cool stuff. Any thoughts, Brett or Keith or Chris?
I'm a little depressed that it wasn't with a bit better product, but one can't argue with the numbers.
Well, everyone's numbers went up, though. I mean, that's the great thing, is that there is overflow into other companies. There's a lot of Marvel stuff that ate it in October, for sure. But right now, they're printing more. They publish more comics than DC does. DC had 17 of the top 20 books.
Neil Adams is right. Anyways,
any chance he can have to throw that in.
Brett, any thoughts?
Well, no, I totally think that it is a great thing for comic books. I totally agree with Chris that I do wish it could have been a better product. And I'll admit I've been struggling through reading some of the 52 titles, but so it's
should
still
have done
a bit
what
of a mishmash,
I did just
but,
stopped. Just stopped after the
Mo, how many weeks is it for you now? What is this now? Is this 8 weeks? 7 weeks?
I don't know. Not long enough.
This will be week. This will be week seven. You're cold turkey. Mo has gone cold turkey. He's so
done.
He's never. He still hasn't gotten over being upset about the new 52, and it's been cold turkey since week four of the relaunch.
Like I say, when 1 year's worth of Jonah Hex comes out, I will probably read 1 year's worth of Jonah Hex. That's it. But hey, at least it worked for other people. And there's lots of other great stuff out there to read. All right, let's get to our reviews then, since we're talking about these books here, and. I'm going to throw off to Brett first for kind of a synopsis and his first review of one of the independent books that we are kind enough to get a digital preview for. Of course, this is Small Press Month. This is Independence Day on We Talk Comics, issue 13. Brett, tell us about Red 10.
Well, Red 10, which we were kind enough to get from Tyler James, it was... just popped into the email the other day, which was a nice surprise. But Red 10 is kind of an adaptation of Agatha Christie's 10 Little Indians, or whatever else you want to, 10 Little Soldiers, 10 Little, and then there were none, and yeah, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so it basically starts out with one of the characters getting killed, and then the other characters in the Alliance team kind of banding together again to find who they know killed her, but at the end obviously they start to remove other characters, but at the end of the book Tyler mentions that as much as he would love to work on the Justice League and take over some of the DC characters, the concept that he would be able to kill them is completely, non-existent, because you can't kill the Justice League. So he decided to create another superhero team that he could, in fact, kill off all the characters. I do totally appreciate that. I think it's a noble aspiration to want to kill off a superhero team. But, I thought that the book was quite good. The storyline, I love the storyline anyways. Like, I'm a big fan of the Agatha Christie story, and I think that, that it is an interesting concept to bring it into a superhero team book. I think that the art's a little bit independent-y, but I think that some of the panels, like the panel placement, could use work. I mean, there's not a lot of differentiation between the pages, but otherwise, I mean, it's a really strong effort. Some good color, nice lettering. So, I give the book a definite thumbs up.
Keith, your thoughts?
Well, I was very familiar with, and then there were none. My day job is a theater, and we did that show last year. It's an interesting take, knowing that he was starting from that point. It was interesting reading the first issue and kind of how he starts laying out the storyline. With the death of a hero at the beginning. The comparisons to Watchmen are obvious, but it's interesting that he started from the same starting point that Watchmen started from, of let's pick a team of superheroes and then start killing them off. But he's gone down a different path as he's developed that, and he's come up with his own team. We're just starting to kind of get to know them. One of them we won't get to know unless with some flashbacks, I guess. And I don't know. I really dug it. It was interesting, and it's a very what I call post superhero look at heroes, where no one's perfect like they were in the 60s and 70s hero comics. We've been kind of in a post superhero time since Watchmen and Dark Knight to begin with. And I love the cover of this book. It is such a striking cover.
Chris, your thoughts on this book, Red 10?
I wasn't looking forward to this book. It's by the same publisher as Runners, which I did not love. But I have to say Red 10 really turned it around. I really, really kind of dug this book. I thought the villain, and there's a little bit of a surprise at the end, was fabulous, named Oxymoron, I believe was his name. Not the best name.
Yeah, but he was their version
was
of the
positive.
Joker.
Yes. Little spot on for the Joker, but I thought his mannerisms and his look were almost iconic. I would buy a book just of him. It was that good. I thought some of the Justice League characters could have used a little bit more defining before you know, they're gone, because it's fairly obvious that they're not all going to make it through this. I would actually argue the art was on par with a lot of the mainstream publishers out there today. I don't quite agree with Brett that it wasn't, but, yeah, I'm going to leave that. No, it was a really good book, and I have to agree, the title page was probably one of the best covers I've seen in a long time.
Yeah, I also thought this was a tremendous book. I don't think the fact that it has the same, I'm always a fan of runners, but I don't think the fact that it has the same publisher at all means that there's any similarities. I mean, it's still independent books. This is just a publisher that is helping these independent people, creators, come together in a ways that they can market and publish and try and gain a greater market share together, but still have a completely independent feel to them and an independent, take on their work. So that's, I don't think that should have anything to do with anything just because you see a publisher.
Oh, no, no. I was judging just from an emotional point of view on that. Not looking forward to it because of that. So. That was not meant to be a comment upon the actual publisher's quality.
Okay. I think all three of these books that we got here are spectacular, personally. And I love Red 10. I'd give it a 10. There was, I mean, truthfully, yeah, okay, there's a little, you can pick apart a few issues. I mean, you're talking about something like how they're doing a Justice League type take on it. And I think that's, what a great concept, though. I mean, that somebody hasn't taken the idea of 10 Little Indians and turned it into a superhero book exactly like this before amazes me. And the fact that he paid homage to both superheroes and their personalities and their character quirks and traits, as well as that book at the same time, and made it his own, is what's really, really good. Some of the characters are just characterizations. They're stock characters. But hey, I mean, if it's going to be a Justice League and they're only going to be a few issues, six issue miniseries to get a chance to kill them off, I mean, what do you expect? But as far as some of the dialogue, there was a point in there where they're talking about how Oxymoron, they say, well, how dangerous can he be? He doesn't even have any powers. And he's like, well, he has the power to kill an entire school of children without even, you know, without even blinking or thinking it's funny. And that's not a superpower.
But talking about how this character, I mean, that idea to me, it defined to me the Joker character as well. And I would love to see Tyler James get a shot someday at some of these DC characters that obviously he used as his inspiration, that he has a love for. Just the idea that, yeah, the Joker has a superpower. He's completely psychotic, and Oxymoron was the same, and this was a lot of fun, tremendous book. Let's go to the next book in the Independent Small Press Month, Sanctuary, Slave Labor Graphics. Keith, explain Sanctuary and your review.
Well, Sanctuary is a hard one to describe. I'd say, with the exception of a couple of lines, it is that mythical 11 or 12-year-old book, except for a couple of jokes that were kind of on the verge. It takes place inside an animal sanctuary, and we see both the humans that work in the sanctuary, some of whom are talking about animal experimentation, and we see talking animals, including gorillas and giraffes, etc. And it was an interesting little story. It's because we see their perspectives. They're not talking to each other, so it's not one of those kinds of comics. It's almost a fuzzy animal book, but it's not. And certainly how the first issue ends up is definitely not a fuzzy animal book. But just the opening of two gorillas, and one of the gorillas is trying to encourage the other one to have to not have sex, but just to mess around. And, you know, if pandas were half bright, they would also be doing it to forward their species, etc. I just found it kind of a cute book.
Chris, your thoughts on Sanctuary?
I liked it. It's a reserved like, not a lot really happened in it, and I kind of wish the jokes were a little funnier to push me over the edge. That said, the ending was interesting enough that I'm buying issue two. There's no doubt about it. I want to see where this is going. This could be a phenomenal run, but I really didn't get enough feel for it in the first issue to really judge if this is a book that's going to last or not. This could be a Sandman type thing where it gets deeper and deeper and deeper in the mythology of these characters. But right now, I have to say, as just one issue, I'm not loving it.
Okay. Okay. Interesting.
I am buying the second issue, so putting that one there.
Okay.
Out there.
Okay. No problems. I mean, I think it was tremendous. Again, I appreciate the fact that not a lot happened, because what it did was it had really good dialogue and really defined the different personalities, because there's a lot of characters and a lot of little subplots that are being put into place. A lot was put into place. Everything got its moment. And nothing overshadowed anything else. I think it really, everything I thought flowed tremendous. I think Keith is right. He called it Fuzzy Animal Books. To me, it reminded me of, this felt like a DreamWorks, cartoon that you could have gone to the theaters and saw, except for just a little too dark with a couple of things that happened, especially at the end there. And we all talk about that. It's nice to have a twist that you didn't see coming that intrigues you. I think this was great stuff, great dialogue, nice, perfect art for the storyline they're telling. And, I love the idea that it's a book that is everything you would think it is and more. Brett, your thoughts?
Well, you know, when I first, it was nothing like what I expected when I first opened the book. You know, I looked at it and I'm like, talking animals? Really? Oh, okay, interesting. You know, and so then I thought, okay, well that's a totally interesting and new way of looking at this. And I thought the art totally fits the style. And then I was working my way through it, and I realized that I stopped caring about halfway through. And then the surprise ending came, and I realized that I didn't care about that either. At the end of the book, I just really didn't care about much of any part of it. I like the concept, I like the art, but the story just left me cold.
All right. Well, so it's basically we got, if we were to wrap this one up, I guess we'd say two bags, a buy, and a burn. Interesting. All right.
I think it has the chance at being interesting on a larger scale.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and I guess if we were to wrap up Red 10, we would say, three bags and a buy. So, I mean, certainly these are at least better numbers than we get for what we got on 52. Chris, you are fortunate enough to be able to give us the synopsis and your first review of the final independent book that we have here on Small Press Month, Independence Day. I think we don't have to assume people are stupid.
Don't even bother.
No, we just assume Brad is. We don't have to assume, we know. Chris.
Yes. This week I'm presenting to you the standard. Really, to explain what's going on, it's a fairly standard superhero fare for our market with a little bit of a twist. It's about your regular, say, Superman-like hero character, the standard. Who has revealed his identity to the public. He has his own reality show. And he's not really dealing with it all that well. At first I thought, okay, I've been here. I've done this before. There was Fortune and Glory. It's fairly standard stuff. And then what every good book in my view does, the last page blows my expectations completely away. I have to say, it takes a lot to surprise me. and I really want to know where this book is going.
That's what Keith's mom did to me, except for it wasn't my expectations. See? See what I did there? See? All right. Actually, I'm going to go in reverse order on this one. Instead of me being next, I want to get Keith's thought on this, because I couldn't help but read this character and have a little bit of Booster Gold in the back of my mind. And since nobody loves Booster Gold on the planet more than Keith, what did you think of the Standard?
It's interesting. I didn't make that comparison, but I see what you mean. The hero who's selling out and selling his appearance on a reality show. There's a great scene where he's trying to bust a criminal, and the guy and the director is not liking the way that he's, you know, arresting this criminal. What I did like about this book is that the Standard, as we meet him, is essentially a legacy character. He used to be the sidekick of the original Standard and has now become the Standard and has gone public, unlike his predecessor did. As a lot of folks on Twitter, including myself, have been talking about the legacy characters in DC and how they all got screwed over in the past few years, particularly by Geoff Johns, to drop names. Wally West, who's vanished completely, and Kyle Rayner, who we don't even know what's going on with Kyle. So the Standard is a legacy character in that way, even though we didn't know the original Standard. And I thought that was an interesting direction to have him be a second-generation character. And again, I don't want to draw too many comparisons to The Watchmen, because this is further away than what I'd say Red 10, but that was the approach of The Watchmen, is that you're actually meeting the second-generation heroes, and then you go back and learn about who the first generation was. So yeah, I really like this book. Again, a really cool cover, and it is a six-issue miniseries. I'm really interested in where it's going. I really like this first issue.
Actually, did I say earlier that Red 10 was a six-issue miniseries? Is it like a 12-issue miniseries, a max issue?
10.
It is 10 issue. 10. Okay, so I did screw that up. Sorry about that. Brett, your thoughts on the Standard?
I love the Standard. Like, I really like Red 10, but I love the Standard. By the end, like, I didn't even need, like, four or five pages. Like, I just thought that the characterization was really interesting. Where the characters were going was really interesting. There was, you know, this is a book that I could easily pick up and read at any given moment. Like, I would probably be happy to read this again right after I finish it the first time. So, you know, really, really enjoyed this book.
Yeah, I think this was just spectacular also. I mean, I guess all of us would give this a bag for sure. I mean, this is, if Animal Man, let's say, is the best of the 52 relaunch, this is on par to me with that. Like, it's as good as you're going to get. Can't recommend it enough. This character here, part of the thing about this character is he was the sidekick of a really good man who always did the right thing, who was the Standard for a superhero, hence the name. And he knows he's not, and he's carrying a lot of guilt, because there's a little girl who's missing, and he had promised to find her, and he hasn't, and he's distracted by all these other things. And then I want to tell you the twist, because it's so amazing, and I can't.
Did anyone see that coming?
I didn't see it coming.
No.
Totally no.
No.
And that's awesome.
I mean, totally off guard.
Just such a good book. And the art was very good as well. The coloring, I think, was just fantastic. Just set the mood so well. Again, I can't recommend this high enough. Brett, where would you, if this was in 52, where would you have put it on par quality-wise?
Oh, good Lord. If this was a 52 book, like especially with all of DC's backing, you know, it would probably be my favorite book out of the entire relaunch.
What about you, Keith, if you were to put it on, just to give people a perspective on how good we think it is?
I'd certainly say top 10. I mean, I liked more New 52 than you guys did, but yeah. I would say definitely top 10. Yeah.
How about you, Chris?
I think it was better than, including Animal Man, better than anything that DC put out, because this defied explanation. I was not looking forward to this book particularly. I was not looking forward to it, but I really was. I was caught off guard, and that's hard to do with guys who have been reading comic books as long as us.
Okay, well, let's just, who again, who was the creator and the publisher, and where can people get some more information on this fantastic book, The Standard?
Well, I'm going to jump in with all three books. Sanctuary, Slave Labor Graphics, what we viewed was a free preview. It was the free copy of number one, which is available electronically on Slave Labor's website. The Standard and Red 10 are both from Comics Tribe. That's comics with an X. The Standard, written by John Lees. Art by Jonathan Rector. Red 10, writer
Keith,
Tyler James.
Keith, can you at least, I don't know if it's available there to you. Do you have the people that did I know two people worked on the coloring on
I don't
the Standard.
Have it in front of me.
No, okay.
Red 10, written by Tyler James, and art by Cesar Feliciano. I'm hoping I'm saying that right.
Nobody's going to blame you, though.
Just Google search Comics Tribe. They have their own site, their own website, and they'll help you details there for how to get a hold of these comics, which you really should do.
Actually, if you go to our website, wetalkpodcast.com, and you check out the links section, then you can also check out Red 10 preview there, as well as hit their shop from our links section.
Cool. Awesome, Brett. Awesome. And I do want to just quickly mention the people that, because I did highlight how good the coloring was, and it was two people who did the coloring on this book, The Standard. So I'm just going to throw their names out here as I open up the book, which I have my digital preview handy, and we'll tell you it was, somebody do a little song and dance while I do this so it's not too awkward.
It was Ray Dillon and Mo James. That's the reason you like it.
That could be it. How could I have forgotten that? But it was just great stuff. Set the mood so fantastic. So, okay, let's just quickly, Brett, one last subject for the week. We have to talk about what characters needed going into 52, still need to, and after 52, in either DC or Marvel. What characters do you think needed or need a reboot?
You know, it's funny because in some cases, like, reboots are really, really, really hard because, as we've learned in certain cases like Green Arrow, when you do completely reboot a character, you stand a chance of pissing off a lot of people and therefore, you know, not getting the sales maybe that you want or the interest. And so I think it's really challenging to look at that, but for me, there's one group actually that I would love to see completely rebooted, all just restarted altogether, because I was chatting with somebody the other day and we were talking about the X-Men, and he was just like, so do you understand what's going on in the X-Men? And I'm like, no, I don't. When was the last time you understood? And I think for me, the last time I truly understood what was going on in the X-Men was back in the 90s. And so there was a lot less teams back then, and I know that they're doing Schism, which is 40 years in the making or whatever, but I think that the X-Men as a team, I would love to see rebooted, just drop everything and just start it again.
Keith has something he wants to add in on that. So do I, but
I'm looking for jump on points with a couple of books right now. I was able to get back into Spider-Man with Spider Island and found the joy of Venom at the same time. And I desperately wanted in
so
Schism. I cannot say enough how weird it is for a 90s comic reader like me to say Venom is my favorite book coming out, but it is. It's so cool. Flash Thompson as Venom is amazing. So I read Schism looking for that jump on point, and Schism I did quite enjoy. And then the Regenesis special came out, and I almost jumped off because that book made no sense to me whatsoever. Schism had done a good job of limiting how many characters you were actually exposed to, really focusing the story on the philosophical difference that was being created between Cyclops and Wolverine. Regenesis came out, and which is basically the two of them wandering around Utopia going, are you coming with me or are you staying here? And it's boring. It makes no sense. There's this weird thing that's built into the story that that's supposed to be illustrative of something. But there were pages and pages where there were just masses of characters that I had no idea who they were, and they weren't telling me. And you're supposed to be looking for a jump on point. Like, you should have just started over if this was all the best you could do.
I just have a question. How many characters didn't it have? I mean, this is basically up into where I read House of M and this. Didn't they kill off almost every mutant, so there's only like 600 left or something?
Well, they left 198.
198. So how many team books and teams can they have if there's only 198 mutants? Or have they already screwed that up and they're already back up to 19,000?
Dude, well, they might be, but dude, that is still 198 characters. Can you imagine the Avengers if they had 198?
Yeah, but some of them are villains and some of them aren't, you know, like.
What's amazing is there are currently 8 X titles.
Holy shit.
With the new launches of the relaunch of Uncanny X-Men at number 1, which is the core book for the Cyclops team, and Wolverine and the X-Men, which is the core book for Wolverine's team. There are 8 titles, 6 of them are team books.
Holy crap. All right.
There's more than enough books. You just can't even go into, like, they will always find, because the thing is that there's so many characters that they really refuse to kill, even like the Havocs and the Polaris and that kind of thing. These characters that you would normally consider secondary, but they fit on a team.
But again, they did reboot with 198, the 198. That was a reboot. It's just, if that failed, then, anyways.
Yeah, but they need more than that, in my opinion. Okay. They need to just lop it off and start
cold,
it over again.
Cold because, start is what he's talking about.
I don't, because nobody understands what's going on. And if they do, let me know.
All right, Chris, any thoughts on the X-Men rebooted?
I'd like to see it happen. But quite frankly, I haven't understood a thing that's happened in an X-book for 10 years. Around astonishing, I just sort of went, I give up.
Did you even listen to what Chris said first? That's exactly
well, no, I'd like to point out that means Chris understands 5 years more than Brett, so he can help out. Which is about 4 or 5 years more than me.
Oh, Jesus.
Well, I think we're just sort of agreeing that nobody understands the Xbox.
It needs a relaunch, okay. All right, Chris, I'm going to give you the chance to do yours next, then I'll do mine thing. And then Keith will be the cleanup hitter on this particular topic. So, Chris, your thoughts. Okay. What characters needed or still need a reboot?
Well, I'm going with it's actually 2 books, The Runaways and Young Avengers. Both had really strong starts and then just sort of got run over by crossovers. They didn't fit anywhere within what they wanted to do with the crossovers. And we sort of just lost them. They had a couple specials during Civil War, and I believe there was one in Dark Avengers, but really not up to par. And it wasn't their own books. I miss them. Wish they'd come back.
All right, I haven't read either one of those series, so I'm not going to throw out an opinion that I don't have, even though I usually do. Brett, your thoughts on Chris's pick?
Yeah, I agree with that. Civil War was really hard on a lot of younger Marvel characters because I think that they really kind of tended to use them as fodder. And so I definitely agree that the closer that we got to Civil War, the more that those titles tended to stray away from when they started, which was, you know, and I really like, especially in the case of the Runaways, their basic origin. You know, I thought that was really interesting. So, you know, it would be nice to see them come back in a good way.
Keith, your thoughts on Chris's picks?
I'm actually not familiar with either of those titles, so I would welcome a relaunch of those. I'd like to get on the ground floor of them. I've heard great things about Runaways, but I've never read it. I've been out of Marvel for quite a long time.
Okay. All right. I guess I go next. It's my turn. One character that did need a relaunch and got it was Green Arrow. I'll just say that. Keith had mentioned before that he was the grumpy old man of the DC Universe, and he was. So, damn it. Thank you for spicing him up a little bit, at least, and giving he had gone stale. A character to me that's been stale for a long, long time that needs a relaunch, and even after the reboot of 52 still needs it, is Lex Luthor. I haven't found him interesting since John Byrne has been there. John Byrne redefined that character and was an interesting take, but even when it was like Death of Superman, and Superman as a character had its greatest momentum with Lee Simonson, Roger Stern, Dan Jurgens, and Jerry Ordway. Thank you. Who took over after Ordway again? Kitson was the one. It doesn't matter. But the point is that the character is kind of a... I like a villain where I understand his motives, I understand his background, I understand his neurosis, I understand... He's a rich genius. He's not even an inventor. He's just a rich genius who's completely amoral and completely aloof. And because of that, I can't relate to him at all. So he doesn't work for me. Or what they've done with him, he's too aloof. There's nothing there that I can latch onto. I'm currently reading the Infinity Gauntlet. It's spectacular. But I think a lot of Marvel's space characters need a reboot. As much as I love Kirby, I can't help but look at Galactus and think he looks a little ridiculous in this day and age. I think Silver Surfer needs a reboot. Too powerful, too hard to relate to. I think that Adam Warlock needs a reboot just because he tends to be a character with a lot of potential that people aren't really count on to. So I think a lot of the space characters within the Marvel Universe need a reboot. Brett, you seem to have an opinion on some of what I just said.
I think that some of the space characters got some of the reboot that you were looking for in their in the later run. That I know.
Annihilation?
I consider
that to have been a... Yeah, I've read some of that. I didn't really consider that to be a reboot. Because to me, a reboot means it's a brand new take, whereas this is just kind of... is more of a jumping on point. And I didn't really think of it as a reboot. More of a jumping on point. That's a different thing to me.
Fair enough. I mean, I Adam Warlock has never really interested me, so you can go ahead and reboot him any way you want, and maybe one time you'll actually nail him, but you know, otherwise I don't really agree with you for the most part. At all.
On either DC or you don't want Silver Surfer rebooted, is what you're saying. Okay, fine,
no.
That's fine.
No,
that's cool.
I don't need Silver Surfer. DC,
what about
did you say again?
I said Green Arrow did need it, and Lex Luthor.
Actually, Lex Luthor, I would agree with you. Like, I don't really care for what they did with Lex Luthor in the new 52 at all.
Which is what he was right before the 52 as well. Which is
okay.
Yeah, really disappointing to me.
Yeah, difficult for me to say because I haven't read the stuff since Superman back when like Ordway and stuff was actually doing it.
Yeah. Okay, Keith, your thoughts on some of my opinions on reboots.
I agree with everything except, to me, Galactus should have purple and blue pants. I started an unsuccessful internet campaign when the Fantastic Four movie was two was coming out, Galactus wears purple pants, trying to stir up resentment of that film. Although it was a failure, so I'm going to
like
pretend.
It needed, yeah.
I'm going to pretend that it was that I was highly successful and I'm
well,
responsible for the failure of that film,
yeah, exactly.
As opposed to the makers of the film who were actually responsible for the failure of that film.
And the actors,
everyone down to the caterer, I think should just take that right off the list.
Dude, I will never forget this. Now that we're on this, and I know you're. But I'll never forget Chris. Who was it? Michael Chiklis? Is that his name?
Yeah.
And Chris saying to me, he was cast as the thing. He's like, that's perfect. And I was like, it's horrible. and Chris thinking it was great, and I just hated it.
I still think it's great casting.
I don't.
It was the rest of the movie that really was not good.
He's in his mid-40s. The character should be in his early to mid-20s. It should look like an athlete, like a person who competes at a high-level Division 1A football. He doesn't. Just because he's bald and would look good as a bald brick guy doesn't make him a good Ben Grimm. He doesn't come across to me like the guy who's the best friend of this Reed Richards character. But anyways, we're getting off on a completely other
subject. He's an ideal voice for him.
He's an ideal voice. I'll give you that. All right. Keith, what were you going to say about my other
Well, Marvel's got an odd history of they don't really reboot unless they just start a brand new version of a character. And this is what the Silver Age DC was essentially that, where they just took, you know, we've got this great name, Green Lantern, and he's a dude with a special ring. So they just made an entirely new character called Green Lantern. And Marvel did this, particularly in the late 80s, early 90s, Ghost Rider, and they brought back the New Guardians with a very new take. But a lot of times they just come up with a new version and like a new character name, as opposed to they've never done a universe-wide reboot. Maybe they need to. There's a lot of talk right now, pro and con of with the success of New 52, is that kind of thing around the corner for Marvel?
Well, it would be one way to cut into that, the fact that Marvel has, what, 20, or DC is 20% more of the share than they have, and it's been a long time since you could say that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And Luther needs the reboot, right?
Oh, God, I hate what they've done with Luther. I was never particularly fond of Luther, except during Byrne Ordway times.
That's what I said.
And I think even up to the time they cloned him, that was kind of a goofy story when they cloned him. And it worked at the time, but in hindsight, it seems like a really stupid story. And ultimately, there's no way to get out of it because you can't unclone someone.
Yeah, no kidding.
Oh, I sure wish.
No kidding. And
they had to go to such lengths to get the character bald again and chubby again and all that stuff to get it back to the kind of the iconic look of the character. So they had to do all kinds of stuff to the character so that they could get there.
All right, do you have anything to add on my opinion on who needed the reboot there?
Well, let me just say Galactus wears short pants. Not shorts. I like the short version.
You like the shorts? That's the original, isn't it?
Yes, it's the original. It's the Kirby version. Where he travels in space in short pants. I just love that.
Something Kirby-esque?
Yeah, believe it or not. I have to disagree with Mo on the cosmic characters needing a reboot. I like where they're going. Although I will say anything that will put more Beatty Ray Bill in my file, I'm pro that. So if a relaunch gets me more Beatty Ray Bill, I'm in. Luther, I think he needs to go away for a while before they relaunch him. You know, take a year off. Give Luther a rest. And then bring him back as the badass he should be.
Okay, cool. All right, it's Keith's turn before we go out here today.
All right. Well, I'll say one last thing on your Cosmic Heroes. We're about to get, by the time you hear this, we will have Marvel Point One will be out, and a new version of Nova is to be in that book.
Okay.
No idea what that's going to be like, but that's hopefully, one of the things that they're setting up for.
Nova, the Herald of Galactus Nova.
No, the 70s Helmet Head Nova.
Aw.
Buckethead.
Yes, Point One is setting up a lot of the storylines that will be big in 2012. So no one knows what Nova has to do with that, but that's one of the things they're teasing.
Okay, is that Volume 32 of Nova?
Pretty close. You know what? I love the Eric Larson Nova. God, in the late 90s, that was great stuff. Carl Kiesel is the guy who took over for Jerry Ordway, just to give credit for his due. So, Keith, your thoughts, though, on who's needed or still needs that reboot?
I had quite a bit on this list, actually. I was thinking of who's missing so far from the New 52. We know JSA is coming. We know Power Girl is shortly after that. Rumor is that that's Earth 2, so it opens up a lot of things if they're going to reintroduce actively the other worlds of the multiverse, which they haven't really been using that much, even though it exists. My first character, I would say Phantom Stranger. It hasn't been used really a lot in a long time. I'd like to see a fresh take of that now that they've started from scratch. Freedom Fighters, back on their own world, on Earth X, in the world where World War II never ended. And the Legion of Substitute Heroes. I don't know if you could possibly add another character to a Legion book without having it explode and just character, like, drawings of characters falling out the edges. Because I think there's 157 characters in the Legion book now. But I would like them to add the Legion of Substitute Heroes.
Beautiful. I gotta quickly mention, in my response to Chris or Kisa 3, or his Who Needs a Reboot, I have nothing to add to that, because what can you add to that? Brett, any thoughts?
No, I mean, I'm a huge fan of Stranger Fan. So I would concern myself with DC's track record about how they would reboot him, but I would like to see him come back in a good way.
Can he sustain his own series? Isn't he at his best kind of showing up and representing that dark area of the DC universe?
Well, of course. I don't think that he can sustain his own book anymore, but I think the truth is that if he does show up, like, especially with Justice League Dark and stuff like that,
yeah,
it would be a good chance for him to get in there. But I think it's just important that he shows up in books that he can be dark enough to be interesting.
Okay, I got it.
It's when he's a lighter character, that's when I...
I got a great idea. How about the Phantom gets rebooted, and over in Marvel, the Stranger gets rebooted. And then, no? Not good enough? All right, screw you guys. Seriously, the Phantom, where did he go? Man, I guess that movie that kind of ruined that character.
The Phantom has been published for the last decade.
Has it? What company?
Yeah.
He's over at Moonstone, I believe.
Moonstone. Ah.
Or Wolf, I think it's Wolf Publishing now. But anyways,
Wolf Publishing now? Okay, that's cool.
I think so.
I would consider them.
He's a long time character.
Yeah,
well, where's the Stranger?
What's that?
He's probably one of the X titles, is he?
The Stranger? No, the Stranger is one of the Elders of the Universe, I believe.
He also wore short pants.
He does. Yes, he does.
That's how we're bringing this all back together. His favorite characters with short pants. Go, Charlie Brown.
You can't forget
Robin.
Beautiful. Any thoughts on Keith's reboots there, Chris?
I would read all those books, although mentioning the Substitute Heroes reminds me of Animal Man's team, the Forgotten Heroes. I'd love to see Animal Man team book.
Okay, if we could get the crossover, Animal Man, Substitute Heroes, and Great Lakes Avengers? That'd be... You talking here now?
You'd have
Amalgam
my...
Amalgam 3, Great Lakes Avengers and the Forgotten Heroes.
Beautiful. All right, let's go out with our final thoughts. Brett, final thoughts and plugs, anything else you'd like to throw out there?
Well, I think that it's a good time to mention that We Talk Podcast is pretty much officially online now. We have all of our previous podcasts. We got a couple of nice blogs going there. We've got links to We Talk Wrestling, links to We Talk Fantasy Football, links to Red 10. And basically we're ongoing, but it's good to see that there's lots of content for people to have a look at now.
And Breck, you can get a hold of him through that website too.
That's true. But more importantly, Brett at WeTalkPodcast.com, and then Brett _ WeTalk on Twitter. And, of course, Cosplayer is moving along nicely, shooting some interviews, going to OdaFest Light this weekend to shoot some more cosplay action. So if anybody's going there in the Calgary area, then feel free. We'll be the ones with cameras.
Excellent. Keith, final thoughts or plugs or anything else?
Absolutely. I am on Twitter, Cub Reporter K. I am now shaking the trees enough that comic creators are coming to me to dispute my points. I don't even have to tag them anymore.
That was hilarious.
And I have had three different comic creators in 3 days that have just searched comments by me and then have started replying. Very, very generous and polite, given that I was not necessarily being the same. And I am writing for thecorrectness.com. It's the Action Smackdown. I will be judging this week's, which is Indiana Jones versus Ellen Ripley.
Ooh. Nice. All right. Chris, plugs, final thoughts, anything?
I'm Chris at chris@podcast.com.
Really?
I just wanted to...
I think you're chris@notatpodcast.com, but at WeTalkPodcast. Yeah, I mean, this is my personal...
I'm Chris... I'm Chris at chris@wetalkpodcast.com. I'm Chris at
WePod.
We have a blooper reel, do we?
I'm dying over here. Hey, it's Chris. I won't cut you off again.
Okay, we done?
I guess. I hope so.
I get the giggles out, I think.
I'm Chris at WeTalkPodcasts.com. I just wanted to say that the comic book world lost somebody very special to it this week. Les Daniels died. If you don't know him, he wrote several definitive histories of many of the DC characters, including Wonder Woman, Batman, and Superman. Look up his books. He was one of the first to really take an academic view of the comic books medium.
Cool, that's cool. All right, sorry to have laughed at you so hard and then you come in with something deep like that. But anyway, still funny. I'm Mo, Mo_WeTalk on Twitter. I'm Mo at WeTalkPodcast.com. You can also reach WeTalk Wrestling on Twitter. You can reach that. Maybe there'll be some content coming up for that show again in the future. Let's hope if wrestling ever gets worth watching again. Big if. But there'll be other good stuff happening. So I just, you know, we continue to work on a lot of stuff on our podcast, and we'd really like to hear from you guys. We have some other blog ideas, some other shows ideas. It's just a matter of time and energy and concepts being strong enough that we get to. But we have some stuff that we think people are going to really like when we do get a chance to get to it. Other than that, I'm just going to say rest in peace to Smoke and Joe Frazier. In my opinion, the second greatest heavyweight boxer of all time behind Joe Louis. Other than that, we'll owe you... What was the last part?
T-R.